Chapter 12. How to make millions selling masks in 3 easy steps. It was 10 p.m. on a Tuesday in early May 2020 when Tim, a juicer salesman, called from California. "My name is Tim, and I heard you're looking into VPL," the man said nervously. I heard the faint but recognizable crackle and exhalation of vapor from his lungs. He was pacing. I got the sense he'd never spoken to a reporter before. A few hours earlier, I had called the owner of Viral Protection Labs Medical, Inc., or VPL Medical, a freshly minted company outside Los Angeles that had gotten about $21 million in contracts to supply 3-ply surgical masks to veterans' hospitals and the national stockpile. It was a standard inquiry, but my call had freaked them out, Tim said, and someone at the company had passed my number along to him. What was his interest in the story, I asked. I distanced myself from the company because they weren't delivering what they said, he continued. A couple of weeks earlier, after the industrial juicer business came to a halt because California juice bars had shuttered, he had taken his shot at joining the craze and becoming a mask broker. I went and got myself $8,000 in cash. I was on my way with the money in a briefcase. I dashed over to my kitchen table, shuffled through the detritus of mail and scribbles and stale takeout, and grabbed my notepad. Boredom was the reason for this encounter. By now, the novelty of working from home and trying out Instagram food recipes was swiftly eroding. I had grown wistful of even the obligatory weekday DC happy hours. Bereft of such mental stimulation, I returned to the data we'd already crunched and sorted, and I ran a few additional queries in search of clues. I went back over all of them. Among what we dubbed curious contractors, listed on a shared drive, were a few other companies that popped out just as federal government experts had. One of them was VPL Medical, whose footprint was suspiciously new. In our blitz of calls for a broader story aimed at accounting for something like $17 billion in new federal spending, we had reached out and been given the company's explanation that it had a good product, had been vetted by the federal contract officers, and was ahead of schedule. The delivery date hadn't passed yet, so there was little to push back on at that time, and we moved on to other targets. My recent caper with Robert Stewart had renewed my suspicions, however. Just 4 days after the company had formed, on April 12, 2020, VPL managed to land a $6.4 million deal for 8 million surgical masks from the VA, which by now I had reason to believe was giving anyone with an email address a contract. That same week, the data showed VPL also landed another $14.5 million deal with the HHS team overseeing the national stockpile. This was a big and important deal. It was an amazing turnaround that raised questions yet again about whether the federal government was doing any due diligence. Imagine starting a company with only the $100 fee to incorporate with the California Secretary of State, and landing more than $20 million in orders backed by U.S. taxpayers in the very same week. That's an extraordinary return on investment, especially for an obscure company with no obvious connections to the greasy beltway mechanics of federal procurement. Odds were that this company hadn't formed because its proprietors had a secret warehouse stocked full of masks that most of the time would be a money pit investment. My guess was that they, like Stewart, probably ventured they could get a purchase order and wrangle the masks later. Hopefully. The listed owner also had a track record that piqued my interest. We learn this from a basic scrub, which we do for any company we're examining. I start with the Secretary of State filings that will provide key dates and the names of owners and various officers of the company, which can often be cross-referenced to find other interesting companies they may have owned, sold, and/or ruined. Unscrupulous business people tend to open and shut down many businesses in their wake, so we're always looking for that trend. VPL was incorporated by Bobby Betty just as the Trump administration released the billions and was based inside a commercial strip mall in Rancho Cucamonga, about an hour and a half outside Los Angeles in the Inland Empire. That was the same address listed for another of Betty's companies, Rock On IT, which, aside from having a delightful name, advertised expertise in website optimization for Google searches and the like. The office was small, clearly not for the manufacturing of anything. I saw nothing that indicated he and his associates had any background in sourcing medical supplies either. The N95 mask they advertised was the exact type, with the ear loop instead of the headband, that the CDC warned were Chinese counterfeits not to be used in medical settings without additional testing. The company had recently issued two press releases, announcing plans to open two U.S. mask-making outfits, which called into question their claim that they already had stateside infrastructure to make American-made masks. They were getting big fast. I wondered if they'd put the cart before the horse. The Secretary of State filings are also a handy guide for our next step, which is running names of people and businesses in state and federal courts' databases to see if they link to any interesting lawsuits, divorce records that might detail personal financials, or any actions from government regulators against the companies or their operators. This is standard due diligence. Long story short, Betty had operated numerous California businesses and been subject to multiple tax liens and about a dozen civil lawsuits, including allegations of fraud, lease manipulation, and breach of contract. It did not take the vast resources of the federal government to dig this up. Just hours before Tim the juicer salesman called, I had followed up to ask Betty about this ordeal and other tidbits I'd noticed while poking around that day. I got Betty on his cell and identified myself as a reporter. He explained that his $6.4 million deal with the VA was going off without a hitch. The masks were all being shipped in from China, though he hoped to start manufacturing masks in the United States by the summer. The deal with the stockpile would be fulfilled next, he claimed. David, look, no one has been in this situation before, Betty said. We've never been in this situation before. He was doing his part, he said, leveraging connections in Asia to help Americans through this crisis. Another capitalist savior. Having a string of tax liens, lawsuits, and fraud allegations was nothing more than the inevitable cost of doing business in a litigious world, he said. But when we move to my basic question of how the company got this contract to begin with, Betty became cagey and opaque in his responses. I don't know, he said. I can't speak to how the government fulfills the order. There was a bidding process. There's a huge vetting process. This time, however, there was no bidding process because the deal had been awarded under emergency contract rules following the president's order. And no government contractor I had ever met couldn't recite chapter and verse how they got their contract and why someone else didn't. I asked what he submitted. I don't really recall, because we're doing so many projects right now. The important thing is right now there is a global pandemic, there is a shortage of masks, and we are fulfilling it on time. It all happened quickly, he continued. There was no time for anybody to think. That piece, I believed. That's when Betty said he had to go to a meeting and that he'd call me back. I asked for his assurance that we'd reconnect, something I often do because for some reason people often don't want to talk to me more than once. The guilt of breaking a promise sometimes works. Betty assured me we'd reconnect. But he didn't call back that evening and he didn't return my voice messages. That's because, according to Tim the juicer salesman, he was on the phone with other people, totally losing his shit. I landed in Los Angeles just a couple of days after Tim Zelanka had told me of his encounter with VPL. The story rose to the level of being worth some cautious travel because Zelanka said that, As curious as I found Betty, he wasn't even the true owner of the Enterprise. The true owner, he said, was a former Mercedes-Benz car salesman named Jason Cardiff, who was yet more interesting. On that day in April, when he zipped east on Interstate 10, breaking the thin shadows of palm trees overhead, a briefcase stuffed with cash in the passenger seat, Zelenka said it was Cardiff whom he was meeting. Cardiff had identified himself as the owner of VPL, though his name was nowhere to be found on the aforementioned business filings. Zelenka came to know of the company through a friend who'd been hired to help with marketing, which I'd later find out meant she was paid a handsome vig for selling the VA on the deal. Intrigued, Zelenka thought he could buy a sample lot of masks and maybe sell them around town, and then come back for more if the product was legit and buyers would place larger orders. But halfway to the office park from his West Hollywood home, the deal fell through as Zelenka made basic inquiries during a cell phone call with Cardiff. Zelenka thought perhaps he had asked too many questions of Cardiff about where the masks had come from, if they were kept in sanitary conditions, and about the company's credentials. He said, "They're not in boxes, they're in Ziploc bags," Zelenka told me, recounting his conversation with Cardiff. And I said, "That's not what you're advertising. You're advertising made in the USA and in sealed packaging." So, a few days after our late night call, we met outside a closed coffee shop in the Venice Beach District, which I chose because if I was going to fly over the country in a pandemic, on the cusp of a panic attack the whole time as some passengers still weren't wearing masks, I would probably need an afternoon on the beach. Also some tacos. We couldn't order coffee, so instead we sat outside as he rifled through files, which were just printouts of web pages I had already seen. I was struck by how this guy could be a walking advertisement for California. His sun-scorched, dyed blonde hair, his yellow gradient aviator shades, the teenager's wardrobe, his svelte physique, it all belied his age of nearly 50. He made a point of it. "Do you mind if I ask how old you are?" he said to me. "No, sure, I'm 32. I assumed he was asking because people are often surprised that I'm not as ancient as I sound on the phone. "No, he meant I looked like shit." "Oh, wow, I would have guessed older, you know." "Thanks. I just mean out here we worry about these things and have cosmetics and everything, so I don't look 50. He paused in solemn repose. "I'm an L.A. 50, which he estimated looked about 15 years younger than 50 elsewhere. Despite this microaggression, I liked Zelenka. I admired his pluck. He was an odd guy, maybe an unlikely and bemused hero, a la Ace Ventura or any Keanu Reeves character. Or he could have been a mid-level Bond villain. I wasn't sure yet which he was, and something told me neither was he. Like many others in the burgeoning underground mask business, Zelenka didn't have expertise in the medical supply chain. He handled U.S. distribution for a Spanish commercial juicer company whose equipment can hold dozens of whole oranges, allowing customers the tactile satisfaction of selecting their own blend of juice and watching the machine pluck, press, and pummel the juice out into eco-friendly cups. His was a familiar American pandemic story. He had been furloughed from his juicer gig, so he was looking around for a way to bring in income. He started making calls and meeting with people who had tangential knowledge of imports from China and how to manufacture masks. In his research, he said, he'd begun to differentiate the bad guys from the good guys. "VPL is a coyote company that should be in jail," Zelenka said. "You can quote me on that." Zelenka's plan was more novel than what other brokers had told me in recent weeks. His plan was to sell masks, gowns, and gloves to the food service industry and workers at places like Jamba Juice. He was looking ahead to when the lockdowns lifted, eyeing a cottage industry within a cottage industry. We left the deserted coffee shop and dropped into his white Infiniti sedan to meet up with the proprietor of a t-shirt factory who had pivoted his business to make cloth masks for, among other buyers, Comcast and the sprawling Kaiser Permanente hospital system. These were the good guys, he said, and I should meet them before we headed to Rancho Cucamonga to surprise VPL the next day. Salonka fidgeted with a dirty yellow cloth mask as he cruised his Infiniti through unusually sparse traffic on I-10. I kept silent as Salonka filled the uncomfortable void, reciting his many run-ins with oddballs and ganjapreneurs whose claims to have legitimate 3M masks or KN95 masks fell apart each time. He retold his various strange conversations with mask suppliers, detailing how they didn't make sense, or there was no product, or the supplier couldn't answer basic questions. It would be like if you went to buy a gallon of milk and you asked, "Is it whole milk or skim milk?" And they didn't know the difference. That's when I realized I forgot to ask a pretty damn important question. Had he actually purchased any masks? "I have purchased none because everyone's full of shit," he said. I asked if he'd made any money yet, to which he replied, "Nope." We arrived at the garment district, and I began to turn over in my head how I'd just wasted about $1,000 of my company's money to meet up with a guy who didn't have any masks. Again, was this my job now? My role in the middle of such an important story, to be the idiot chasing idiots chasing masks? I set that discouraging thought aside and hoped this journey would take us somewhere worth writing about. The tour of the t-shirt factory was interesting. A few dozen workers feverishly stitching together masks and gowns and dropping them in large bins. But it was, from a reporting perspective, a waste of time. I wasn't sure why Salonka wanted to take us there. Perhaps he wanted in on the business and thought I was a fluff writer who might help place him into the good graces of these businessmen, whom he'd known for all of 2 weeks. But it wasn't entirely pointless to go along for the ride. On the way back to Venice Beach, Salonka piqued my interest with a comment about a venture capitalist in Florida who claimed to have connections with 3M and was interested in sinking $1 billion, with a B, or so, into the mask trade. Salonka would play back for me some of a recorded video conference call. "We've got several $1 billion sitting in escrow to procure product right now, and we need it yesterday," said the man on the phone. "We had no idea what we were doing, to be honest with you." Salonka provided a misspelled version of the guy's name and said he was a venture capitalist working for a company called something like Oasis. This was quite an escalation from $8,000 in a briefcase, and I questioned whether this investor was legitimate. He said that he wasn't sure, but that he was working to secure a pipeline for masks from a source in Mexico. "I think he's looking for a credible source that isn't 3M, that he could use to supply the federal government with masks," he said. Anxious yet quizzical, Salonka appeared to be suffering from an internal moral dilemma. Can one make a profit off a global crisis without becoming a vulture? And where is the line? "Then I would be what you're investigating," Salonka joked. "A profiteer." The next day, Friday, we met outside a Walmart in Rancho Cucamonga, around the corner from VPL's modest headquarters, where he told me his plan was to just walk in with a reporter in tow. I told him that we don't misrepresent ourselves or go undercover in any way, and that if I was asked, I would identify myself as a reporter. I'd gone inside to get a Starbucks double espresso, and he got his own Monster energy drink, which, in between spirited guzzles, he joked would be my last non-alcoholic drink of the weekend. After this, he'd be heading to Mexico, he said, to see a guy about some masks on behalf of his mystery investor in Florida. As Salonka and I talked that whole week, he had told me he was still in contact with VPL and had arranged with Cardiff, VPL's alleged shadow owner, to view some new product, this time KN95s, the Chinese equivalent of the N95, whose origin and efficacy were the subject of much speculation and fear. I had done my due diligence on Cardiff that week and discovered an array of scams that he employed to live the life of a rich Californian. In 2018, for instance, the Federal Trade Commission filed suit against a company that Cardiff and his wife operated, which regulators described as a pyramid scheme. Regulators said the scheme involved robocalling people and making false and unsubstantiated claims for dissolvable film strips advertised for smoking cessation, weight loss, and male sexual performance. I did not expect this mask broker trail to lead me to dick pills, I admit, but there we were. In response, a federal court shut down the Cardiff's operation, froze the couple's assets, and required a third-party receiver to control and monitor their money. But in March 2020, about a month before VPL was born, Cardiff had been found in contempt of court for flouting that receiver and the judge's order by, among other infractions, hiding assets in Canadian currency worth about $1.5 million. This filing was the one Zelenka had found through a basic Google search. I dug into the filings a little deeper. The Trade Commission accused Cardiff of opening a secret account in his 90-year-old father's name and using those funds to continue his lifestyle. The Cardiffs are spending nearly $17,000 per month, court records stated, on Bentley, Porsche, and Range Rover lease payments, private elementary school tuition, restaurants, phone and cable bills, salons and spas, pet grooming, a 5-star hotel in New York City, music lessons, taekwondo lessons, ride shares, movie theaters, and other lavish expenditures. The couple also stopped paying the $12,000 a month mortgage on their home. Oh, and that secret account in his father's name? Strikingly, federal regulators said, it was not paying for his father's retirement home bills. These records made me wonder if Zelenko was right, that Cardiff was the actual shadow owner of the company hired to get masks to the federal government and healthcare workers who were dying without them. Subsequent court filings would later reveal Cardiff's history to be even more colorful. But I had enough intel to tag along with Zelenka and see what gives. Together, in Zelenka's Infiniti sedan, we drove around the corner and meandered through an asphalt maze of nondescript 80s-style buildings in search of a door that would lead to the suite number registered to Rock On IT and Viral Protection Labs Medical, Inc. It was then that Zelenka revealed we did not have the element of surprise that he had envisioned. That's because he'd called his friend Stacy, who worked marketing for the company, and told her he was coming with me that day. Also, Zelenka revealed in the parking lot, Cardiff wasn't even answering his calls. There was no briefcase, no meeting time, no element of surprise. I didn't understand Zelenka's decision to give the company a heads up, but it wasn't my place to manipulate the situation. I was along for Zelenka's ride to see what he saw, and he was in the driver's seat. The point of this adventure now unclear, I followed Zelenka inside the building. As someone who's knocked on countless doors with nothing but a hunch and a prayer, I believe all doomed reporting missions should be seen through to their end. Besides, Zelenka was a funny dude and I'd come all this way. So, as the world outside was falling apart, we roamed the empty halls, two guys in masks, one with fogged-up glasses, the other aviators, one zapped on Monster Energy, the other on Starbucks. We knocked on the door for Rock On IT. Predictably, there was no answer. After many tries, we returned to his car, where he called and texted Cardiff to no avail. Without any masks or much of a story, we drove back toward the Walmart parking lot, and Zelenka expressed remorse that his promise to show me the seedy underbelly of mask brokers had petered out. Well, he said, at least you can go home with a suntan. When I returned, I attempted to answer the obvious questions. Who was Zelenka's mystery investor? Did he blow up the VPL surprise visit because he had a deal in the works? What was Cardiff's actual role? I took these inquiries as far as I could before publication. When I called Cardiff, he pretended not to be Jason Cardiff, said he'd never heard of him. But I knew it was him, and we'd later have several conversations via the same phone number. In an email, Betty, the owner listed on VPL's official paperwork, did acknowledge that Cardiff was involved, but claimed he was a consultant. I wasn't sure how to tell what just happened, if anything had happened, but my editor invoked the adage, "Just tell people a story." "This madness," she said, "was outrageous in itself when you consider the tens of thousands of Americans who are dying, whose best defense against the virus, it was becoming clearer each day, was access to a decent mask." A couple of days before publication, as Zelenka and I plodded through the routine follow-ups and clarifications, he texted me and said his investor is looking to spend $1.8 billion on 3M model at a cost of $6.25 each. They list for about $1.27. Anyway, he continued, "I'm meeting him in Texas on Wednesday, and if the Mexican supplier works out, I'm going to visit them the following day." I called the firm and investor that Zelenka named, and while I could see the investment firm did exist and was interested in PPE, I didn't get enough evidence to meet publication standards for printing the firm's name. Zelenka said he had proof, but he'd signed a non-disclosure agreement and didn't want to be sued. In the end, I'm not sure it mattered. Also, I doubt Zelenka was able to become the profiteer he'd pondered becoming. Could they all just have been bored, ambitious people blowing smoke up each other's asses? I reached the VA and HHS to tell them what I knew about Betty and Cardiff and to see if they had any response or complaints about their dealings with the men. The VA confirmed it had received masks from VPL and they were satisfactory. But HHS was still waiting. HHS has taken appropriate steps available under federal acquisition regulations to request the company provide assurance that it will uphold its contractual obligations as we consider our options moving forward, a spokesperson for the Strategic National Stockpile told me. Narrator voice: they didn't. The day before publication, I connected with Zelenka, who said he was in Dallas to show clients how to sanitize high-end juicers. The prospect of being the star in a story about the absurd world of mask trading had soured on him. He was on defense. He'd pulled out of his promise to have a profile photo taken. I told him the story wouldn't say all that much about his business, as it wasn't even clear what business he'd done. "It's just a tale," I said. And his experience gave us an unusual entree into this world. "He's not in the PPE racket," he insisted. "He never really was," he now claimed. His sole focus was juicers now. "I'm not going to comment on anything because I'm not sure how that will go," he said. I reminded him of what he'd said about billion-dollar investors, the alleged Mexican supplier, and his aspirations to break into the business. "You're breaking up," he said. "I can't hear you." The call ended. I never heard from Zelenka again. The headline read, "The Secret Absurd World of Coronavirus Mask Traders and Middlemen Trying to Get Rich Off Government Money." The story recounted my time with Zelenka, but was filled in with a great deal of context from federal purchasing records and a few dozen other interviews I'd done. I wasn't exactly proud of the story, which began with a suitcase full of cash and ended with all the satisfaction and resolution of a Richard Linklater film. But if we hadn't published the story, pulled on the thread to see where it led, we never would have gotten back to the dick pills. Someone involved in the Federal Trade Commission case must have seen the story and followed up, using their power and that of the court to find evidence that Cardiff was, in fact, the shadow co-owner pulling the strings behind VPL and its gambit to get rich selling masks, all while hiding the true profiteer behind the enterprise. The court receiver had obtained emails that showed Cardiff had delineated how he wanted the company formed, who its board would be, and how he would control it. I am not going to lose another company, Cardiff told his lawyer in an April 5th email. He was referring to the alleged pyramid scheme that had the FTC crawling all over his finances. One of the ventures that had been shut down, Prolongs, claimed to offer men increased ejaculation control. He went on to detail a list of people he'd hoped to lure to the board of this new company, including a right-wing pundit with ties to the Trump White House. The email showed Cardiff wanted to cement controlling stock of VPL and the ability to buy out his partner, who would later be the listed agent on corporate business filings. As I have raised all the capital and done all the work once again, Cardiff wrote, I am not going to lose out on perhaps my biggest company to date. Further, I have a group that wants to put in 10 mil this week. VPL was incorporated 7 days later, sans Cardiff's name, and 12 days after Cardiff's email, VPL began landing multi-million-dollar federal contracts to supply cheap surgical masks for healthcare workers. Any money gained from that enterprise then would have escaped the gaze of the FTC and the court receiver. A chain of emails, the business ledgers, and other exhibits that the court receiver included in the filing confirmed a few of my nagging suspicions, such as Cardiff being a co-owner, and that there never were any American-made masks. They showed that Betty and Cardiff would pocket about $2 million in profit each on the VA cash alone. Zelenka's friend, who is handling the marketing, Stacy Barker, got paid about $257,000 to set up the deal with the VA, which records suggest was easy money. The email showed that when Barker set up the deal with the VA, which appears to have taken only a few emails, she told the agency that Cardiff was in fact the CEO. A simple Google search would have revealed with whom the VA was truly doing business. The dick pill guy. In consideration of the masks that the VA did ultimately purchase and receive, records show VPL paid a Chinese manufacturer just $2.26 million. That's less than half the total taxpayers would eventually pay. Another $1.2 million went to shipping and logistics, after overhead and the personal payouts to Cardiff, Betty, and Barker. The company invested another $285,000 from the VA deal to buy machines from China that could make masks, ostensibly to fulfill the company's purchase order with the national stockpile. But, perhaps more important, the documents committed to the official record illustrated the trend I had been reporting in bits and pieces. The federal government and states were throwing out billions in seed money to all kinds of unsavory characters. This time, after I contacted his attorney, Cardiff agreed to talk with me. He put in plain words how he managed to get rich off the pandemic, as one federal agency paid him millions at the same time another agency was suing him for millions. The tough part is not getting the government purchase order or the financing, Cardiff told me. The tough part is executing. While he maintained he wasn't the true owner of VPL, just a consultant, which is very clearly refuted in court records, he explained in detail how the company worked. His ticket to riches, and that of many others, followed a simple three-step process. Step 1. Get a purchase order from a desperate government agency. Step 2. Use the purchase order to get financing from private investors. Step 3. Buy masks from China. As you can see, the government is desperate for its citizens, so it reaches out with a broad reach and says, if you can get masks, I'll pay you, he said. At the time the follow-up story was published, my unscientific perusal of Amazon found the less effective surgical masks pricing anywhere from $7 to $25 for a box of 50, often less than a quarter per mask, depending on quality. The VA paid about 68 cents per mask. The VA paid Cardiff's company at least $5.4 million, federal purchasing data shows. After the stories ran, officials overseeing the stockpile canceled the $14 million deal with VPL. According to court records, the company's contract with HHS included the stipulation that any masks received must be made in the United States.